Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, news and views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. So, welcome, Jimmy Moore, to the Paleo View.
Hey, hey, hey.
You're our first episode in our second year.
That is so cool. I am so honored.
You're like our new, the Paleo View year's resolution-y guest, though. Isn't that kind of, I don't know.
I don't know what that means.
I didn't understand it.
I was thinking like New Year, like New Year's, and you do like resolutions, and it's like the New Year of our show.
Maybe our resolution is.
I'm really sleep deprived. It's pretty much the same as giving me a lot of alcohol. So just everyone ignore what I say for the next hour.
Just deal with it.
Well, Jimmy, as you probably know, we rarely have male guests on the show, but if we're going to have them, you were on our very short list of people to also include. So we're excited to have you this week and talk about some of your projects that you have going on. Specifically, you have a new book coming out shortly, which I'd love for you to kind of give people an overview about and just kind of, you know, elevator pitch who you are and some of the projects you have going on for people who may not have heard of you.
Sure. So I am Jimmy Moore. I'm the guy behind the Livin' La Vida Low Carb blog and podcast. I do two other podcasts. I have five podcasts that air 5 days a week. I do a forum, a YouTube channel, pretty much everything. I figured out a long time ago, you guys, if you're going to reach people, you got to go where they are. And so they're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they're on Google Plus, they're hanging out on, you know, forums and that kind of thing. So I try to be in all of those places. I have written a couple of books self-published, but I have a brand new book coming out, Cholesterol Clarity, What the HDL is Wrong with My Numbers. And we have a website for that, cholesterolclarity.com.
Awesome. Cool. And I've also been on one of your other projects, which is the low carb cruise that you hold annually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that. I do so many things.
Keep track.
Sometimes it all runs together, but you can find all of my stuff at livinlavitalowcarb.com.
So, welcome.
Thank you.
I personally, when Sarah and I were talking about having you on the show, and we knew that you were coming on, you know, specifically to talk a little bit about your upcoming book, but one of the things that I really feel like is powerful and important for us to talk about later in the show after we gossip a little bit about AHS is fat phobia. You know, I wrote a post earlier this year inspired by a conversation that we had on a Paleo FX panel in the spring. And I think it was really helpful and powerful for people to hear some of the things that you and I said about how before we lost a lot of weight, how we were treated and, you know, how we've kind of moved along in that journey emotionally, both to realize now that we are people worthy of attention and compliments and all those kinds of things, but also, you know, how do we deal with the emotional aspect of for so long in our lives not being treated well?
Right.
And then kind of piggybacking on that is the double entendre of fat phobia, which is that a lot of people are scared to eat fat, you know, scared that eating fat will make them fat. So I thought, and Sarah thought, the topic of fat phobia would be just a really good, all around good topic for us to kind of package everything Jimmy Moore.
I love it.
1 hour soundbite. So I'm really looking forward to this podcast personally. Sarah and I took last week off because we had an epic anniversary podcast, which yeah. I honestly haven't even finished listening to because it was so long. Our blog assistant Monica, who's awesome, put it together with Matt, and it's kind of like a surprise show. I'm listening to it as I go along. And Sarah, I don't know if you've listened to it.
I haven't had a minute to myself yet.
Oh my goodness. So the very first clip that was shared was one of the very first, I think it was the second Science with Sarah episodes. And at one point I say to you, do you think pastured pork has CLA? And we both say, I don't know. And then at another point, we're talking about the benefits of organ meat. And you say, yeah, but I can only do tongue and heart because I just really don't like the taste of any other organ meats. And
which
I was like,
so funny.
Oh my gosh. That was only 1 year ago. We're just crazy people at this point. So
there's now like, I eat liver every day and like kidneys, like one of my favorite things. Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to hear some of my early shows. I sound like Mr. Roboto.
Oh God.
So, let me ask you that next question. And it was horrible.
Well, definitely yeah. We didn't have as good of a rhythm either, but it was, I mean, it's like fascinating to yeah. listen back and be like, wow, is that really only 1 year? Like that's,
yeah.
Well, it's amazing too. Cause you know, I think when we think like, I think we all recognize that it's a journey and that our opinions change as we research more and we experiment on ourselves more and we understand our own bodies and we just sort of understand the whole, you know, scientific field surrounding the ancestral health movement better. But sometimes it kind of feels like, oh yeah, but that was like way long ago that I said that.
Right.
And you know, maybe it wasn't that long ago. Was it really only a year ago that I didn't like kidneys? Weird.
I think you specifically said, yeah, I don't like kidneys. I just cracking up as I was listening to that clip. So,
well, okay, just for everyone out there who's looking at organ meat and saying that there's no way that they could ever get to like organ meat, apparently I am proof that it takes some time less than a year.
There you go.
And you have scientific evidence to prove it.
N equals one.
N yes. equals one experiment of sorts.
Yes. You guys are fun.
Well, Jimmy, but before we get really deep into the show, I just want to like do a little like shout out to you because when I first started blogging, I think I was like 3 weeks into blogging. You shared one of my posts on Twitter, and I literally went from having like a grand total of 8 page views ever to having like 300 in one day.
Nice.
And it was like, it was seriously, it was like the beginning of that momentum for me. And then all of a sudden I found myself on Low Carb Conversations. And then that was like the beginning of even more momentum. So you're kind of like how I started.
I love it. I love it. And y'all's podcast is just rocking it. I'm so proud. When I first started podcasting in 2006, there was me and really nobody else. Sean Croxton came along about a year later, Rob Wolf a year after that. But that was it. I mean, there was none for a long time. And I remember it was Stacey at Paleo FX 2012. I put out a call. I said, if you love and you have the gift of gab, you need to be podcasting. And apparently a lot of people took that to heart because the next year, 1 year later, we had 50 new podcasts out there that are all
we now have so many that somebody could have a 2-hour commute to work.
Yeah.
Each way, every day, and yeah. be able to listen to like a different podcast the entire time. That's cool.
And from a wide variety of perspectives, too. We don't all come at this from the same angle. So it's, different strokes, different folks, and pick your poison.
Absolutely. Well, I remember you saying that to people. And I, too, want to say that, Jimmy, you were one of the first people to kind of propel us into popularity, so to speak. And you've always been just so supportive and empowering of others. And I think that that's one of the really powerful things about this movement in general that I think we should, you know, all kind of give each other high fives for is that, you know, I don't see a lot of, there's only so much, you know, commodity, so to speak, in paleo, and therefore we all elbow each other out of the way. I think we're all interested in propelling people's health, and a lot of us do it, especially in the beginning, for no profit at all. In fact, I think the first year and a half we ran our blog, it cost us more money than we, you know, ever made.
Yeah.
And but we did it because we were really so thankful for the changes that had happened in our lives, and we really wanted to spread that message, and we wanted to show families that it can be done, and it's not just about performance in the gym. It's about long-term health. It's about, you know, all the things that families really should be focusing on. And so for you to have kind of supported us in that way as well was really awesome. So you are such a gentleman, and I know that people hear this all the time, but it can't be said enough. You are just as genuine and nice in person and in real life as you appear to be online and in your podcast. So thank
you. I can now attest he gives awesome hugs.
I do like to hug people, so that's cool.
AHS was such a huggy conference. It was really fun.
It was. Everybody was hugging everybody at that conference.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if previous conferences are like, or other conferences are like that, but AHS was like one big hug fest. It was cool. It's been a long time since I've been surrounded by huggers. It made me like miss it. Yeah, it was awesome.
Sarah, I need a hug.
Oh, a virtual hug. Or virtual I'll hug. Get in the car and drive 2 hours.
So tell me more about AHS, guys. What did I miss? What were your like top three favorite moments?
Oh, well, man. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I say my top favorite moment? Tops. After my talk, after I finally got to leave the room, because after my talk, I had people lined up asking me questions for an hour and 20 minutes. So after I finally got to leave the room, I got stopped by another person whose name was Anne, and her husband, whose name I forgot. I'm sorry. But Anne listens to our show. So I just want to say hi, Anne. And when she heard that I was going to talk at AHS, they live in Mississippi. It was like 5 hours away. And she like told her husband then how much she wanted to come to hear me talk. And it was his anniversary present to her to go to AHS to hear my talk.
Wow.
Isn't that awesome? So yeah. I just want to say hi, Anne. And it was really nice to meet you. I mean, it was really nice to meet everybody, but I mean, I think that's just really cool. And I also found out we have at least three more male listeners. I think we're up to like 26 now.
Oh, four of you count Jimmy.
Wow.
That's funny.
We're getting up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hated that my panel with the ketogenic diets and exercise performance was exact same
exactly
time.
At the same time, I know, so I missed yours. And
no.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to watch each other's videos when they come out.
Well, that's what I kept telling myself. Like every time I had a tough choice of whose talk to go to, they scheduled Chris Masterjohn and Chris Kresser at the same time.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Well, they were thinking, how would it be fair to put anybody at the same time as Chris Kresser or to put anybody at the same time as Chris Masterjohn.
That's true.
And if you put
them
both up at the same time, you just kind of split us all in half.
Yeah.
But, you know, anytime I had a tough choice of whose talk I was going to go to, that I just went, okay, well, I'll get to watch them all online later. So, and there was a few talks that I actually went to and I thought, oh, I think I'm going to want to watch this online again.
Yeah. It was really weird on the first day. There was all these talks about sex, and that, I was like, it was like one right after the other. Did you notice that, Sarah?
I noticed that, and it seemed a lot of consumer psychology. Was it just me? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it really didn't have anything to do with paleo really at all. It was kind
of
weird.
Well, it was more of a – because it was all approaching – it was neat because it was approaching – consumer buying habits, but from an evolutionary perspective. So it was it was sort of tangential, very like far away from what I tend to think about, and sort of tangential to I think some of the other talks. But it was kind of an interesting start to the conference.
Yeah. Well, it really got weird when it first started because who was it? Was it Boyd
Mel Connor
Eaton? Or Mel? fell off the stage. No kidding, Stacey. He fell backwards and somebody caught him. It just happened to be standing there, but he fell backwards.
Oh my gosh, you should see my face. My mouth literally was wide.
It was just, well, that was pretty much everyone's face in the audience.
Yeah, the gasp was amazing.
And I think, you know, Catherine Morrison, who was one of the organizers, she was so thankful she was in the room because she said she probably would have died if she had actually seen that. Like, it was just, and it was because there was a lot of AV problems during the conference. It kind of got better each day, but sort of every morning it would start really bad. And then as the day would go on, things would sort of get sorted out. But I think he kind of got thrown off by having a lot of, like his slides weren't advancing and he was having issues with, there was feedback in the mic, and I think it just threw him off. But it was, he rebounded like a star.
Yeah.
And his talk was fascinating, but that was like, I don't know, I wouldn't call that a highlight.
That one jolted everybody. Okay, we're awake.
Yeah.
Well, what was each of your favorite talks that you did see?
I will start. I really loved Tony Federico's talk because he did a talk. He's a fellow podcaster. Was it the Paleo Magazine Radio, PMR? And he talked about how we have processed foods, but we also have processed relationships via like Facebook. And so how many of us are addicted to our Facebook that we have to like every moment of every day know what's happening with all these so-called friends at all times? And that if we didn't have that hit of the processed friends, like processed foods, we would have withdrawals. It was a really fascinating kind of thought process there. I never really thought of it in that way. Of course, I don't dwell online. I mean, I'm online a lot. Yes, it's what I do for a living. But from a psychological standpoint and a emotional need standpoint, I thought Tony hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, I missed Tony's talk. It sounds really – I have to watch that on YouTube later.
Yeah.
Sounds like something I need to hear.
I enjoyed meeting Tony, though, because he's a pretty – he's very articulate, and he's very charismatic. Superstar. He's awesome.
It was ironic. I live tweeted his whole talk. So a few people were like, do you see the irony in live tweeting this talk?
So every talk that I was in, the same one as you, Jimmy, I could see you tweeting away at the back, and I was like, I'm just going to ignore the fact that my phone is vibrating in my pocket.
That's just Jimmy Moore. It'll be there. Now, it was funny because our internet, Stacey, was horrible this year. It was hard to get in the tweets. Like, I do a pretty good rhythm of like.
Yeah, I think you're award-winning, if I recall, from PaleoFX. You got some sort of like best recap award or something.
But usually about 4 or 5 a minute is my average, and I was only able to bump out about 1 or 2 a minute with the slowdown of the server.
Yeah, depending on what room you were in, it didn't work at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was tough. But we survived. How about you, Sarah?
I think my favorite talk was Esther Gokley's talk.
Yeah.
I actually – it was a kind of a weird story for me because I was going through edits for my book about 2 weeks ago, and I had said something – in my one of my lifestyle chapters about making sure that when you're working at a, whether you're sitting, standing, or walking, that you have good posture. And my editor said, well, can you expand on that and say exactly what good posture is? And I thought, well, I guess I should look that up.
Yeah.
So this started me down this like rabbit hole of, oh, you know, good posture isn't actually what, you know, what we actually, most of us actually think is good posture. And I found Esther Gokley's work, and she actually talked at AHS last year, but I didn't go, so I didn't know that. So I ended up ordering her book, and then for the 2 days that I had to wait for it to come to my door, I watched like every video I could find on YouTube that she had done, of like every talk. She had done a couple of instructional videos on her, like she's basically done her own anthropological research into posture. And she's gone to these sort of remote places and studied, you know, hunter-gatherer societies and studied their posture, their movement, you know, where, how they hold their shoulders, how they, especially paying a lot of attention to how, where the curves are in their spine. So then I have been reading her book, and then I found out she was talking at this conference, so I had to go. And this conference, she did a talk on walking. And so when she asked for volunteers, like, I was one of the probably 30 or 40 people who literally volunteered and was like walking in circles at the front of the presentation room while she was like walking us through like how to set our hips to get the right curvature in the lower spine and keep the top, you know, of our back straight. And it was just one of those things. Like, she's coming back for a workshop in November to Atlanta, and I'm gonna sign up, because it was just like, for me, it was, you know, I think about ancestral health, it, not just in terms of diet, but in terms of lifestyle. But posture was not something that was on my radar at all. So I have to say, it was sort of this like really neat kind of like, I'd been studying her. And I have to say, like, the very first day I bumped into her in the exhibitor hall, and I like practically molested her. It was really embarrassing. I was like the least cool that I was the entire con. I was cooler meeting like Mark Sisson and Rob Wolf and Chris Kresser. I was like much more cool than I was meeting Esther Gokley. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've been reading your book and I really love it. And then by like 2 days later, I was sitting with her at dinner, and she was like, oh, by the way, my I was talking to my daughter about you, and she just reminded me that it's your recipe that is like the molten lava chocolate cake that is my absolute favorite dessert. And then we just went, whoa, okay, small world. But I really enjoyed that, because I think it's, again, something that isn't necessarily, like, we talk about, you know, MoveNat type, you know, exercises, and this is sort of like, should be the foundation of that, is how we hold our bodies at rest and with simple motions like walking. So I highly recommend her book too. Like, if anybody listening is dealing with any kind of, like, it's not just back issues, but shoulders or like carpal tunnel syndrome or tendonitis, like all of this has roots in posture. So I think that was my favorite. But boy, there were some awesome talks.
Oh, and Stacey, beyond the talks, it was the first time they ever included movement sessions as part of AHS. Movement sessions have only been a part of like Paleo FX in the past. But they had Daryl Edwards come back over and do some primality sessions. I did that. And as of the recording of this right now, I'm still sore from the primality. My quads are still on fire.
He did some funny ones when we were waiting for a remote for me to do my talk.
Yeah.
And so it was just like an impromptu, let's do a movement session while we're waiting. And so he had us all play fight in slow motion. It was like,
love it.
It was like, it was silly, but it was like, you could really feel, you know, your, especially your core muscles, like as you like would like fake take a punch and lean backwards, and it was a nice icebreaker too. It was good.
Well, and the most wicked part was it was so friggin' cold in hot Atlanta.
It was like October weather. Our weather, yeah, is not normally like too. That.
It's crazy.
And it's supposed to get back up into the low 80s this week.
Yeah.
So it was like just for the conference, we had this weird, like, I think one day it didn't even hit 70, Stacey.
Yeah, it hit a record low for the high temperature. And
yeah,
all the people from Seattle were like, man, we feels like home except for the
yeah, it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, it was kind of a nice break in the heat.
Yeah,
I didn't particularly enjoy driving on the highways during rush hour in the rain.
Yeah, that wasn't fun.
It's not my favorite. No, I'm really glad I don't do that drive every day. That's a shout out to my husband who does, because that's like not fun.
Cool.
So, I had a good segue when you guys were talking about that posture book, and I was going to be like, so, Jimmy, tell us about your book. And then you started talking about weather, and I got nothing.
Sorry.
Well, we can pretend it was a good segue.
That's a great segue.
Say, Jimmy, tell us about your book.
So it's called Cholesterol Clarity, What the HDL is Wrong with My Numbers. And I can't take credit for that subtitle, by the way. A guy at my church came up with that. I was telling him about the premise of the book, kind of being a consumer-friendly, very easy to understand, telling you what your cholesterol numbers mean, if anything. And he's like, yeah, what the HDL is wrong with my numbers? And I went, oh, my gosh, that is awesome. And everybody, I mean, Christine just started cracking up when I told her that. And I pitched it to Victory Belt. They hated it. I had to actually, like, convince them that that was the right title. And I said, trust me, when you get the manuscript, you're going to see why that fits perfectly with this book. And once they started reading it, okay, now we get it. They didn't realize, they thought it was going to be a real serious, somber kind of book. I'm like, you asked Jimmy Moore to write a book for you. I'm not going to write a sad, somber book. I myself have dealt with high cholesterol issues for pretty much my whole life. It was assumed I had familial hypercholesterolemia, which I tested it just for this book, you guys, and 5% or less chance that I have it. So it's pretty unlikely that I have familial hypercholesterolemia, despite the fact that it's been as high, my total cholesterol, as 419 back in December. Currently, it's 306. And I wanted to know what that means. Does that put me at great heart health risk? I've always heard you've got to take a statin drug to lower your cholesterol when it's over 200. We've all heard that. We've all believed that because the man in the white coat said it was true. So, as you know, I like to kind of do experiments on myself and take back control of my own health, as you guys have. And so I wanted to dig deeper into this. So I kind of went into my skill set. I've interviewed a couple of people. And so I called up 29 of the best ones that knew what they were talking about with cholesterol and interviewed them just for this book. And I got one of my favorite ones to be my co-author, Dr. Eric Westman from Duke University in Durham, North Carolina, to kind of chime in. And he went behind me and made sure all the science was right. So that was a lot of fun, because I don't want anybody to think this is Jimmy Moore's opinion. We tried hard to make this very science-oriented, but at the same time, user-friendly. And hopefully people walk away from this that knew nothing about cholesterol and will be very educated on it's a lot more than the total in LDL.
That's very cool. There are a lot of people who are very confused about cholesterol out there who need to read your book.
I remember when Rob's book was out and popular, there's a section of it on cholesterol, and I was listening to his podcast, you know, the first year I was paleo or whatever, and it seemed like almost every single episode someone was asking a question about cholesterol, and he would say, you obviously didn't read the section in my book. Let me clarify even more for you. So clearly there is a need for this information, and I don't yet have a copy of your book, but when it arrives,
You will very soon.
The first ones off the press has actually arrived at AHS.
Yes.
What was that? Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, I got the very first copy, Stacey. So, they're barely getting out just now. I think they're still on the printer, and you'll have it in a few days. But, it's sad that people have become so, I guess, bogged down in their health because of this whole issue. And there's been a lot of books that have been out there that say, well, just don't worry about your cholesterol. Well, that's all fine and good, but I live in Realville, and I get email after email after email that says, okay, I hear that you say don't worry about it, but here's my numbers, and I'm worried. So we wanted to give people a resource that not only gave them a reason why they shouldn't worry, but if you're going to worry, at least look at these numbers. And these are much more indicative of any heart health issues.
Cool. Well, I look forward to reading it and finding out and gifting my father and other people in my life who don't even have cholesterol problems but take a statin drug because their doctor says so, a copy. Those kinds of things horrify me, knowing how bad statins can be for you. So not just cholesterol wise, but the side effects that they have towards other things. And for people who don't know, my very layman's interpretation that I try to drill into people that I know is like, you know how there's good fats and bad fats? Well, statins stop them all. And so if you're stopping your bad fats, you're also stopping your good fats. And that means that your brain can't get them. And, you know, your bodily function that needs those healthy fats, they're not getting them anymore. So it's, you know, I think Sarah and I have talked about too before on the show, science that has shown, you know, long-term effects of statin drugs as being, you know, in my opinion, more worrisome long-term than the short-term would be for, you know, perhaps having a higher cholesterol number, but showing no signs of heart disease or other things that would be a better indicator. So,
well, and it's even more egregious than what you were saying with the statins removing both the bad and the good fats. When you take a statin drug, the LDL does go down, but what happens is it destroys all of the large fluffy kind of LDL, which are the better kind. It leaves all the small dense LDL, the ones that are very highly atherogenic. That's not a good thing. And so, yes, your LDL-C number will be beautiful. It will go down below the 100 that they like. But at the end of the day, you're making your heart health much worse by removing the very thing that is acting as a healing agent in your body to prevent you from having a cardiovascular event.
Yeah. I look forward to reading more because I am not well-versed in this area. Although I did do some saturated fat and cholesterol research for Beyond Bacon. It's about one page. So.
And it was a great one page.
Thanks. It was a scary one page. I like where you said that you had Dr. Westman come behind you and kind of look and support, because I know how nervous Matt and I were writing the first basically 50 pages of Beyond Bacon, where we talk about a lot of different things that we didn't really feel qualified to talk about ourselves, but we know what we know from research and whatever. And so we did have the help of really smart friends like Sarah come behind us and, you know, give us high fives or tell us where we needed to tweak a little bit. So.
It was fun.
It was a nice break from what you were doing.
I know. Every time you sent me an email with a question, I was like, oh, thank goodness. I was writing at the time. And I was like, oh, okay, I can think about something else for a second. This is great. Yeah, I miss those days.
All right. So speaking of you doing some research, I think you've done some for Science with Sarah.
Oh, of course.
Look at that segue. Was actually productive.
That was a little bit corny, but it works. It was a little bit corny, Stacey.
You guys cracked me up.
What else can I? I'm full of, you know, corniness. I have nothing. I'm here for punny banter. That's what I'm here for.
Better than peanut butter and jelly.
Yes. No, thank you. I was going to say I'm full of corn, and then I realized that like I'm not at all.
I misinterpreted.
Yes.
At least it's not genetically modified.
It's heritage, honestly.
All right. You want to do some science then?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. So today for Science with Sarah, because I don't think I've actually addressed exactly why it's important to have a balanced ratio between omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acid intake, I thought since we're talking a little bit about fat phobia, talking about the good fats and why it matters how much omega-3 you have versus omega-6 would probably be a good topic. So the important part here to understand is that we're really only talking about the long-chain omega-3s, DHA and EPA, and we're really only talking about the omega-6 fatty acid, arachidonic acid, which is actually it's like converted from linoleic acid when you eat linoleic acid, which is like the most dominant omega-6 in like most of the refined vegetable oils like canola oil. So what happens with AA or arachidonic acid and DHA and EPA is these fatty acids are integrated into the cell membrane. So the membrane of every cell is composed of
what probably a lot of people have heard of before, the lipid bilayer. So these are little fat molecules that are arranged in such a way so that think of them as kind of like little jellyfish. The heads of the jellyfish point to the outside of the cell and the inside of the cell, and the little tentacles point towards each other, and this creates a seal for the cell. It creates the whole membrane. And inside the membrane, there's inserted all kinds of things. So there's inserted, you know, various proteins like receptors. There's some kinds of proteins that form little pores that can control the flow of various substances inside and out of the cell. And one of the things that gets inserted into the cell membrane is these fatty acids, AA, DHA, and EPA. And they're kind of stored there. I mean, that's sort of it's kind of like the pantry of AA, DHA, and EPA. So then what happens is when the cell needs to make a particular class of proteins that are either autocrines or paracrines, let me come back to what those are in a second, it converts these fatty acids into those autocrines and paracrines. Now, autocrines and paracrines are kind of like hormones. But hormones are like long distance signals. A gland in your body or an organ releases hormones, and that sends a signal to your whole body. Autocrines and paracrines send short distance signals. So autocrines send signals within a cell, or, you know, to a cell might just, it's a signal it's sending to itself to communicate within the cell. And a paracrine sends a signal to a neighboring cell. So they're like short distance signals. But they're still really important molecules, especially when it comes to things like inflammation, pain signaling, and blood clotting. So the autocrines and paracrines that are made out of AA, DHA, and EPA as sort of building blocks, these all have really important roles in inflammation, antioxidant production, blood clotting, blood vessel dilation, which relates again to clotting and to inflammation, and pain signaling. And these are prostaglandins, thromboxanes, and leukotrienes. And you've probably, I think people kind of have heard of some of those. Like leukotrienes, there's a lot of leukotriene blocker medications and prostaglandin blocker medications. Thromboxanes are the targets of some anticoagulant medications. So there's already some drugs that are kind of manipulating these that people may have heard of or have a family member who's taking. Or, I mean, I've actually been on leukotriene blockers. I was on them for many, many years long ago when I was very sick. So those molecules are basically made from AA, DHA, and EPA, which are stored in the cell membrane. And so the ratio of AA, DHA, and EPA that's stored in the cell membrane is completely related to how much you eat. So if you, it's not like we preferentially store one or the other. It's whatever the ratio in whatever you eat is how much the ratio is going to be in your cell membranes. But then which ones you have in the cell membrane will determine exactly which prostaglandin gets formed, which thromboxane gets formed, or which leukotriene gets formed. And these are classes of compounds that some are more inflammatory than others. So if you have, across the board, if you have more AA in your cell membrane, arachidonic acid, your body will preferentially make more of the most inflammatory prostaglandins, thromboxanes, leukotrienes. Whereas if you have DHA and EPA in your cell membrane, you will make less inflammatory prostaglandins, thromboxanes, leukotrienes. And that is exactly why a high omega-6 diet is an inflammatory diet. Because if you have a lot of AA in your cell membranes, your body is making the most inflammatory signaling molecules that cells use to signal, you know, to their neighbors. Whew. Did I totally confuse you?
That's a mouthful.
It is.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing for me because one of the tweets that I saw coming out of AHS was the importance of omega-3 consumption and ratio, especially for women who are stalling or plateaued in weight loss is what I think the tweet said. And it was about kind of a lot of the things that you tangentially touched on. But I'm assuming that that was linked through inflammation and systemic dysregulation and that sort of thing that omega-3 can really do a good job of pushing through. So kind of in
there's certainly some other differences in how some other changes that can happen in the cell related to the ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 intake. But these are really the ones that have like the most direct effect on inflammation.
Fascinating. So the point is, don't be afraid of fat, right?
Right. Eat the right kind.
Yeah. And we hit that pretty hard with the cholesterol message, too, because those omega-6 fats are so inflammatory. And you cannot have heart disease without inflammation.
Yeah.
And so in the book, we talk about how there's kind of two villains that are the real villains. It's not saturated fat and trans fats, although trans fats are very bad. It's the carbohydrates that are refined mostly and the vegetable oils, which are all those omega-6 oils you were just talking about.
Way to bring it home.
Bring it.
All right, so let's talk about fat.
Let's talk about fat. Mm.
I was kind of hoping Jimmy would sing it. I knew if I started it, he'd finish
it. You open the door, yeah. I will take it every time. I might even go, give you a little
beat. Good at that.
5 days a week. Jimmy
I am Moore. So tired right now. That's what it is.
Oh, that was one exhausting conference.
Yes, but it's always fun. But yeah, you come home and yeah.
I always find that you end up doing things that are anti-productive to the things that are going on at the conference. Like you were saying, Tony was saying, don't do social media and you're tweeting it. And oftentimes you're learning about, you know, you need to be sitting less. And meanwhile, you're in a conference where you're staring all day. Or they're telling you to sleep more and you're staying up late hanging out with friends. Or they're telling you to eat clean and you're going to a restaurant and eating things cooked in, you know, rancid seed oil because you're out and traveling and blah blah blah. It's always counterproductive, and I always come home often less healthy than when I left, but with more information to get cleaner. So
yeah, I was actually really impressed with the number of people who were standing at the. I mean, I was one of them, but for most of the talks I went to, but the number of people who would stand at the back, and it wasn't because they wanted to come and go. Or chit-chat or something at the back, it was because they didn't want to sit. There's also a lot of Vibrams around.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Apparently, according to Mark Sisson, they are now called Vibrams. I have to correct my pronunciation of
Stevia's Mark Sisson. Dead, corrected your pronunciation?
No. He said they used to be Vibrams. He was just telling the story. They used to be Vibrams, but now they have rebranded themselves as Vibrams.
Interesting. I always just call them five fingers because I have regular shoes that have Vibram technology, but I wouldn't call them Vibrams because they're not five fingers. So,
what kind of shoes are they?
New Balance.
Oh, okay. Minimal. The minimus.
Yeah, they're not minimus. They're like I have a slightly less minimus that I use when I run because I'm prone to shin splints because I'm a terrible runner. So, yeah.
Esther Gokley's book.
Way too much information. Okay. I want to move on to talk about fat phobia. Are we ready?
We're ready.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So why don't we start with the emotional side of fat phobia. And we've got a really good question that we're going to talk about in a minute. But maybe, you know, I think it might be really nice for our listeners if we share at least the short version of the story, a little bit about our own emotional journeys from all three of us being morbidly obese to all three of us being like normal size people.
And back and forth start? A few times.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I went. I lost 100 pounds, gained 100 pounds, lost 120 pounds. Yeah, I did that.
So I'll start because I think it was kind of my my vision. You're right. Yeah. and two, I wrote the post on it. So for me, you know, I never really realized how terribly I was treated in the world. Not just from a perspective of being teased in elementary school, right? Like, we all have our stories. We all, there's always some jerk in school or some bully doing something that they shouldn't be doing. And, you know, Matt had it way worse than I had in school because he was skinny and geeky and he really liked comic books. So, like, I'm not even talking about, like, school, high school, elementary school. I'm talking about as an adult living in the real world. You know, I think some of the examples that I gave at PaleoFX were like, people wouldn't hold the door open for me because for them, it was like I didn't exist. It's easier for a lot of people's minds to just literally turn off the idea that something exists because they're uncomfortable with it. And I think that that is also something I've heard of people with disabilities, right? Like, it's rather than making eye contact and saying hello and offering to hold the door, people are so uncomfortable or afraid that they choose to just ignore existence. And so I went kind of my whole life with the grocery checkout person not saying anything to me, not even being friendly, not, you know, just kind of the bare minimum of what needed to be said in checkout, and people not holding doors open for me, even though I clearly was carrying, you know, a ton, a load, whatever, and couldn't make it through the door without their help. And because I didn't exist, it also made me feel like I didn't exist. It gave me a sense of self, like my self-worth was diminished as well. And so, although I've always been an intelligent person and I've always been an articulate person and I've always had very strong opinions, I never really felt worthy of sharing them with people. And I never really felt like it was something that people wanted to hear. So why bother? And so even though I've spent my whole life kind of having information and being smart and doing really well, like in elementary school on a state math test, I scored second in the state for both male and females. And it was the first time that a female had ever ranked, I think, like top 10. And they came to my mom and they made a big deal out of it and wanted to put me in special schooling. And I kind of freaked out and was like, no. Like, I just want to be normal. I don't want anything special. I don't want to do whatever. And, you know, when Matt found out that I scored that high, he's like, well, why didn't you, you know, go to a magnet school? Why didn't you do whatever? And I'm like, well, I was invited, but I didn't want to because I wanted to do just the requisite because I didn't feel worthy of doing that stuff. And I also didn't want to put myself out there any more than I already was because I just felt so awkward and uncomfortable and not worthy. So, to come to a place where it's not just the weight loss. And I think that's what is most powerful about all three of our stories is that we didn't just come into this and lose some weight. We came into it and changed our lives. And we've become leaders in a movement because our passion has allowed us to finally kind of open up those doors and say, I am worthy. I am smart. I have something to add. And people want to hear it. And even if they don't want to hear it, I'll find someone else who does because I have something to say and I want people to listen because it's powerful and important and it can change people's lives. It changed my life. So, you know, what's interesting is on a day-to-day basis, for people to hold doors open for me and for the grocery person to say, hey, how are you? How was your day? You know, I like your earrings and things like that. I'm so uncomfortable with compliments. I don't know if you guys are like this, but, you know, because I spent my whole life never being complimented, in the short time that I've, you know, the last couple of years where I've started to be complimented, people on social media who are our fans, so to speak, are so kind. They say the nicest things. And I mean, we all have our trolls, but for the most part, people are so supportive and kind and they say really nice things and they are so complimentary. And I literally say always the wrong thing because I don't know how to react. And Matt's like, you just need to say thank you. And I'm like,
thank you.
I know, but I'm like so incapable of just saying thank you because I'm still kind of getting comfortable with that. And I think on this long kind of tangential rant, I think it's really important for people to understand how some other people feel. And when I wrote my post about fat phobia, my point was to say that a lot of people in this community specifically are uncomfortable with people who are not the picture perfect ideal of health as defined by, you know, Shape magazine or CrossFit athletes. And I think what's really, really important, and for me, something that I'm coming to learn and respect about myself, is that I might be my healthiest at my weight today. At right. over 200 pounds, that might be my health. Because anytime I try to lose weight, and I know we talked a little bit like last week and the week before about how I'm training more. When I wasn't eating enough, I wasn't eating the right ratios of things, I started having irritable bowel type syndrome. I wasn't able to sleep. And I was losing a few pounds, but I was also losing my health. And so once I kind of found that balance where I had to eat more in order for my hormones to regulate and for me to be able to sleep at night and for me to be able to properly digest my food, I stopped losing weight. It's like, if that's what my body is telling me, that I need to eat this food in order for my health and my hormones to be well, maybe this is what health looks like for me. I've lost over 100 pounds and kept it off for years. Like, that's okay. And I'm okay with the idea that I might have excess body fat. And I am extremely healthy. I work out, you know, 3 to 6 times a week. I'm strong. I can play with my kids. I have energy to do all the things that I wanted to do. On a piece of paper, a doctor would have no idea how much I weighed because I'm a picture perfect idea of health. And so for me, you know, I really put that out there for the community to say, get over being afraid of people who are overweight. It doesn't mean that they're not healthy. Now, granted, it's not an excuse for overweight people to say, I'm healthy and I can continue to sit on the sofa and eat potato chips. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, if you're putting it out there and you're watching what you eat and you're getting exercise and you're doing, you know, you have good sleep and you're focused on your lifestyle and stress management and all those things that you need to do, it's okay to just accept yourself the way that you are. It might take time. Maybe I'm on a year, 2 year plateau, and 2 years from now, I'm just going to, like, you know, bang it out and lose the other 50 pounds that I want to lose. But if that doesn't happen, I am learning that that's okay. And I want the rest of the community to understand that that's okay, that we can have representatives of health across all spectrums, because they don't know what my history is and they don't know how I'm living my life and choosing to be healthy and eating the foods that I'm eating and all that kind of stuff.
And where you've come from.
Exactly. So I'm like all sweaty.
I got a song for you.
Love you just the way you are.
There you go.
Thanks, Jimmy. And so do my kids and husband, which is really what matters. You know, like,
and me too.
You know, what do I care if, like, a million blog visitors don't like me?
I kind of suspect it's the other way around.
Yeah.
She has trouble with compliments, remember. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, Sarah.
Hey.
So, Jimmy, I know you had some of the same experiences that I had. I don't know, like, to what depth you want to or
yeah, I mean, I'm cool with sharing my heart. I think it was Stephanie Rupert that made me cry for the first time on a podcast. I'm like, don't make me cry.
Oh, but she brings it out on all of us.
I know, right? But yeah, for me, it was in my career. I always felt that invisibility that you were talking about, that I'm not there. It's amazing. You're bigger than everybody else, but you're smaller than everybody else simultaneously. It's a weird dichotomy. But I remember in my career, I always felt like I had incredible gifts to give with my talents and my education and just skill set. And there was always opportunities, but not for Jimmy Moore. And so I always felt like there was kind of this glass ceiling that I would only get so far because of my weight. And I never really understood that. And it wasn't until I started losing weight that it was funny, you guys. I didn't get anybody to even notice I lost weight till 100 pounds were gone.
Wow.
So I ended up losing a total of 180 pounds. it took until 100 pounds. And it was almost like overnight. It was so funny because I'm walking around and, you know, people just ignore you and everything. And then suddenly I hit 100 pounds lost. Nobody knows that. But that, did you change your hairstyle today? There's something different about you. I'm like, I've lost 100 pounds. What? And, you know, it kind of opened doors. And then, of course, as I continued to lose and became, as you guys were saying, a little more normal weight, you know, people started treating you, started talking to you for the first time. I mean, I don't know if you guys experienced that, but it was weird to me. People would come up to me and talk to me that never talked to me before. And that was kind of freaky to me because, all right, why do you care about talking to me now and you didn't care about talking to me 6 months ago when I was 410 pounds. It was kind of weird. But I've seen that. And even within the paleo community, I did not sense that last year when I had gained back some weight and was around 300 again. Nobody was judgmental, at least not to my face. It was all love and respect. And I admire that about this community because we do rally around. And there is a certain image, I suppose, of the CrossFit look, the Mark Sisson look, for lack of a better term. I still want to look like – no, I'm just kidding. But, you
everybody
know, I mean –
that's how like I Mark got Sisson, my mom.
Jimmy. I want to look like Mark Sisson. Let's
exactly.
That's how I got my mom primal. I showed her Mark Sisson. I was like –
sweet.
Hey.
Yeah, and his wife's not half bad looking either. So.
Exactly.
So, you know, we have these images of ourselves, and I love how you put it, Stacey. This may be the best I ever get, and that's okay. And, you know, I'm always pursuing, and I know you are too, and both of you guys are, always in the pursuit of health first. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if you're healthy, you're going to be at the weight you need to be at. And so taking the focus off of the weight, letting it be that natural side effect of healthy living. And I loved how you put it too, Stacey. You look at yourself on paper, you would never know what you look like and that you might have a few more pounds than you really want. But metabolically speaking, you're the picture of health. And I see the same thing. Despite my very high cholesterol, all the right numbers in my cholesterol panel are beautiful. My inflammation markers are well under one. I have a heart scan score of zero, no calcified plaque. And yet I eat a diet that's extremely high in fat and, you know, that would freak out most people because they just don't fathom that that's a healthy way to eat. Let's redefine what healthy means for people. And I think that's what all three of us are doing.
Yeah. I don't know if I have anything like unique to add. I certainly remember when people started flirting with me and it was weird. Like, you know, the first few times I was like so flattered, like it was so cool. I totally let it get to my head. And it was just this like, you know, oh my gosh, that you know, waiter is flirting with me. And it completely changed the dynamic for me of going to a restaurant. I mean, now it's almost weird if it doesn't happen. And it's such a different – it's like having different social status without ever – you know, without – like it shouldn't be. Like it's not – there's nothing else has changed. Like it's not like I'm – you know, it's not like they're like, whoa, look at that movie star over there. I'm going to go flirt with her. Like, there's nothing different. They don't know who I am. They're just flirting with me because, you know, I'm worth flirting with. It's kind of a weird, it's just like, yeah, it's like a weird social status. You go from being anonymous to being, to getting attention. And it, you know, there was a transition period where I didn't know what to do with that attention. Like I was really socially awkward because I had no practice. Like it was not something I had any familiarity with. And it's really changed for me, you know, how I interact with other people. You know, I make a really I mean, I guess it's natural to me now, but I hit a point where I made an effort to be the person who opens doors. And to be the person who makes eye contact and smiles and says, how's your day going? So much so that I don't even think about doing now. It just comes out. But
me too.
There was this point where I kind of became aware of what was, you know, that something had changed. And I don't know that I could put it as succinctly then as I can now, but that it made me just decide that I was going to be the person who opened doors for people and, you know, said hi and, you know, whoever they were and chat. And, you know, I that in many ways actually sort of formed my personality now. Just a part of that was the age that I was, you know, being so overweight in my teens and losing weight in my early 20s and then gaining it back in my mid 20s and then losing it again in my early 30s. You know, that's been such a long journey for me, and so linked with not just the other health issues that I've had to go with, but, you know, I realize looking back on it, how much my mental health was a symptom of everything else that was going on. And my ability to handle stress. I was having anxiety attacks at one point. And all of that was really, really linked. And it's sort of a strange, yeah, it's a journey that I don't think when people are frustrated with their weight and they just want to lose weight, it's part of the journey that I don't think people expect. I certainly wasn't expecting it.
It's interesting. You said you became nicer to other people because of the attention and everything that you were getting because of the change that you had made. I saw that happening to myself. And I wonder if that's like a compensation for kind of all the years of being ignored. We kind of feel like, okay, now we want to give other people the opposite treatment and kind of bend over backwards to make sure we don't give them the same treatment that we've gotten for so many years.
Yeah, for me it was, I've always been a hard on my sleeve, really sort of type A overt personality, but I was always that, there was always like my comfort areas. So I was really that with my friends and I was really huggy with my friends. But if we went out to a bar, I felt really, really awkward because I felt like, you know, the fat person in the room. And so for me, what happened, I think, was I got to be me everywhere. As opposed to just me in my comfort areas, which was the Elliott Building lobby at the University of Victoria, let's face it. So, you know, for me, it was sort of, I came out of my shell or I stopped censoring myself or something. I just felt comfortable being me everywhere. And, you know, me is kind of a outgoing, cheerful, happy, connect with people kind of person. But it went from
the opposite of me, curmudgeon.
What? Never. Are you kidding me?
I'm the yang to your yin.
I don't believe that for a second.
Bunch of yin yangs around here.
You're so not a curmudgeon.
I can't even spell curmudgeon.
We don't need to spell words to be able to say them on this show.
There you go. That's true.
It's the magic of Monica. She spells things for us.
Yes, Siri does too.
Siri's so, very useful for that, by the way.
That's true.
Yeah. I use Siri a lot as a spell check.
So is there anything else you guys want to add? Or you want to answer this question?
Why don't I read out the question? Because okay. maybe that will sort of obviously point us to places to add. This question is from Jennifer from Edmonton, Alberta in Canada. My family and I made the switch to a paleo primal diet 3 months ago. We are mainly paleo, but we just could not give up our AM yogurt and we have rice once a week. My name is Jennifer and I, like you, Stacy, have three young ones, but all girls. LOL. I guess our journey with food started 10 years ago when I was 19. I had just had my firstborn and I looked and felt horrible. I have pics to prove it. We stopped eating processed food right there. No more fast pizza pops or odd chicken burger patties. We were not perfect, but we were slowly churning for what we felt was better. Through the years, we developed our diet more and more, cutting out all processed, boxed, equaled processed at this point, foods from our household by the time our second arrived. Then we gradually made a switch to eating all whole grains and having more veggies. In 2011, our third was born, and she sent me emotionally, mentally for a loop. So I decided I needed to lose weight I was carrying for me. I started running, but my body couldn't hack it. I tried multiple diets and nothing worked. I was stuck at 195 pounds. Now, 2.5 years has passed, with multiple attempts to lose this weight, including diets, Weight Watchers, the Dukan diet, I'm not familiar with that one, cabbage soup, and exercise regimes, yoga daily, Wii workouts, insanity day, insanity, run walk intervals. And now we have been paleo for 3 months, minus the half yogurt a day, and yet I have lost nothing. I have gone to many specialists, dietitians, doctors, and I am superbly healthy inside. There's nothing wrong with me, and they keep saying, keep doing what you're doing, etc., etc. Now, I do hold a lot of pride in how we eat and how I raise my kids on healthy food, but emotionally, I am dying. I feel I have failed as a mother because I am not what I am preaching to them. I do not show healthiness. I have so many skin issues, psoriasis, eczema, acne, and the obvious 60 pounds overweight I carry do not portray what I am trying to teach them a healthy choice of food will get them. It's hard to swallow because my husband, whom has been on the same diet crusade as me for two and a half years, has lost 40 pounds and is running in a death race this summer, 125 kilometers in under 24 hours. All the while, I feel like I will be the example of what not to do for my kids. But I want more. I want more. I am seeking something. Sounds horrible, I know. But I am not sure what I am looking for. I read all this miracle of paleo stories on my Facebook newsfeed and cry, why haven't I seen any results? I know you are not a medical professional and you cannot diagnose or find me the cure. But I would be gracious and thankful for anything you can tell me.
Wow.
So, before we talk about the emotional part of it, I do want to say that I highly encourage, I'm not judging, but I highly encourage really cutting out that yogurt, because Sarah and I have talked about before, specifically skin conditions, autoimmune or immune-related, are often highly reactive to dairy, and it could be having nothing to do with weight. The solution to your skin feeling better. And I know that it's hard to give up something that you really love. There are certainly coconut milk yogurt products out there that are a little more processed, or you can make your own, or you could, you know, switch to a new routine in the morning that gives you comfort, like bacon. But I would definitely suggest seeing if that helps your skin. Now, do you have anything you want to add to that, Sarah, before we move on to like the emotional side of it?
Yeah. We on this show talk about the importance of sleep a whole lot, especially when it comes to losing weight. And there was actually a really fascinating talk at AHS by Dan Pardy. And so Pardy is P-A-R-D-I. So when those videos come online, I will definitely be advertising them on my blog. When they come online, I would watch that, because he really explains why sleep is so important to weight loss. And he actually was showing results, not from his studies, but from another study that had, I think it was like some kind of rodent, rats or mice, on an isocaloric diet. So all of the mice were on the same diets, but they had mice that were just allowed like to sleep and as much as they want. And then they had mice that were kept up for just like an extra 2 hours before they were allowed to go to sleep. And the mice that lost 2 hours of sleep gained weight, whereas the other mice didn't. So, and the only difference was, you know, I don't know how much mice sleep, like some mice got 12 hours and some mice got 10 hours. And they've actually shown this in people that there is a they don't quite understand all of the details about how sleep is regulating fat storage and metabolism. But I know personally from my own experiences losing weight that sleep has always been like the number one thing for me, and that if I'm sleeping better, I'm not as hungry, I'm not craving food. But it's more than that. Like, just if I'm prioritizing sleep, that the weight comes off. And if I'm not prioritizing sleep, the weight creeps up. And I still find that even in my body now, even with a super clean diet, if I don't get 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night, my weight starts to creep up. And so that would be the, you know, the other sort of maybe piece to the puzzle that might be missing, that might be frustrating. I mean, with, I know with 3 kids, it's really hard to prioritize sleep. I know with 0 kids, it's hard to prioritize sleep. I mean, there's so many things that take our attention away from sleep, but it really, really is critical, not just for losing weight, but for health in general.
And Paul Jaminet had a really good talk at AHS on that as well, about getting your circadian rhythms back in line again. And he actually helped me because I was struggling with sleep about a year ago when I was having my weight issues. And I got all the things that he said to do, get bright light in the eyes early in the day, like, so your body knows, okay, this is daytime. And then of course the blackout curtains at night, and making sure that all the blue light is out and all those good things that we know to do, we just never do them. It really made the difference, and I get 8 to 9 hours of sleep a night, and my weight just shot right back down in conjunction with a good diet.
Yeah, I third. Sleep is good.
Sleep rocks.
So do we want to maybe address a little bit of the emotional side? I can definitely relate to the feeling of frustration that I want to bring up my kids to be healthy, and I'm not the model of health. I mean, for me, my youngest was 2 when I went paleo, and for it was actually my oldest was 1 when I had my big crisis that helped me get my act together, and I realized I was pre-diabetic. And it was, you know, like I wanted to be healthy for my kids, and I wanted to be able to run around and play with them and have energy for them and not have them grow up with the same health issues and, you know, really dysfunctional relationship with food that I had. So I can really relate to that, you know, that sense of frustration. And especially like I can relate to it from the perspective of I was struggling to figure out what healthy was and what to do to be healthy. And it sounds like she's got most of it down. And she's struggling with the perception part, which I like, I can see that being really frustrating.
Well, I don't want to be the one to answer this fully, because I feel like I said what I needed to say already. But what I heard when I read that made me sad, because I feel like part of parenthood, and specifically being a mother, I've heard friends of mine say that they don't want to say in front of their daughters that they don't like their body, or that they want to be healthy for their kids, or they feel badly that they don't look as healthy as they want their daughters to be. And I feel like all of these are really unhealthy mindsets to put upon our daughters. These are the exact things that gave me emotional and eating disorders growing up, is this idea that there's some preconceived notion of what could be or should be done as a parent. And I feel like what I strive to do as a parent, and I'm not saying I'm perfect, because there are plenty of days where I look in the mirror and the kids see me try on 8 outfits because I'm just having a bad day. But I feel like what I really strive to do as a parent is to be proud of who I am and to be confident in who I am and talk about the things that I do that are good. And we're open and honest with the children about what our health was before. They see pictures of us and they ask questions. And Finn's in our middle child, who's 5 right now, is in this phase where he likes to talk about my old belly. And, you know, I just try to talk about it with complete lack of emotional attachment to what he's asking, because he's asking sincere questions and trying to understand health. And I just feel like as a parent, if you can get your mind to the place where you're talking about what you're doing that's good and focusing on the choices that you're making and the life that you're living, that's a general sense of positivity that's just essential to emotional well-being of children, in my opinion. I feel like the more we feel and the more we think, even if we believe our children don't see it or our children don't perceive it, they do. They're very smart and they pick up on everything. And so if you believe that you are not a model of health, they will believe that you are not a model of health. And it sounds to me like you're making every effort possible to be healthy. And that is what you want your children to understand, that you are trying your best and you're doing your best. You know, I was a vegetarian, and the first 2 years of my first child's life, he got pretty much nothing but soy. And I could go around, you know, complaining and being upset about that, or I could say, I did what I thought was right. I did the very best that I knew how to do. And 10 years from now, if I find out that living a paleo lifestyle and, you know, having this life where I've given up grains and I eat higher fat and I, you know, embrace saturated fat, turns out that it was completely wrong and that all of the science that we believe is correct, you know, I'm not going to look back and say, wow, I ruined our lives and our health. And what was I thinking? I hope that I look back and say, I did the very best that I could do. And I thought that I was doing the right thing. And now that I know better, I'm going to do differently. I just feel like that to me was, you know, when I heard the question and when I heard how things are being phrased, that's what I took away from it.
Woohoo.
Yep.
Didn't I say I wasn't going to get on a soapbox? I'm sorry.
You kind of did, but that's okay.
Completely separate soapbox from other stuff. I don't know. Sorry.
By the way, Sarah, the Dukin diet is a low fat, low carb diet.
So it's just protein?
As written, yeah. It's a very, very high protein diet.
Interesting.
Yeah, we talked about it on Low Carb Conversations because it includes some really weird stuff. It's, and I wonder if some of that's probably still in this lady's diet, that, or maybe her thinking about diet is a little bit of the fat phobia, which I know we're going to talk about here in a minute. But, you know, I wonder how much of that could be contributing to this, that you really do need that fat to be and feel healthy. And it doesn't sound like maybe she's getting, from a dietary standpoint, maybe enough fat.
Yeah, it's especially really important for hormonal health and mental health. Mm-hmm. So it may, you know, it may make a really big difference for her.
Absolutely.
Should we move on to the next question? Because that was a pretty good segue, Jimmy.
Woohoo.
So the next question deals more with the, you know, fat phobia rather than the fat phobia. But more of the actual, like, let's just talk about what it means to eat fat. And specifically, this is going to be a question about blood cholesterol. So, Jimmy, you're, like, perfect here today. But I was thinking that maybe before we answer this question, we should take, like, 4 minutes and just dispel some of the most prevalent myths about dietary fat that are out there.
Clog your arteries.
They do not clog your arteries. That's right. Fat, or how about
fat?
There you go. Or how about that dietary cholesterol, like in eggs, raises your blood cholesterol?
Right.
That's not true. That's been known to be not true for like nearly 20 years in the scientific literature.
In fact, Peter Attia did a talk earlier this year at some conference I was at, and he said the body only absorbs about 20% of the cholesterol you eat, meaning 80% of it is excreted out of your body. So stop fearing the eggs.
Yeah. Actually, you know, we should actually point people to Dr. Peter Attia's site. It's eatingacademy.com. Is it .com? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he has, for anybody who really wants to understand the detailed science, he has some of the most thorough explanations of the relationship between dietary fats and cholesterol and blood cholesterol.
Whole series.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it's like a 7-part series or something. It's crazy.
The straight dope on cholesterol.
So, you know, while you're waiting for Jimmy's book to arrive at your doorstep, that would be a really good resource. So, like, how Absolutely. I threw that in there.
Sweet.
How about that vegetable oils are healthier if you have cardiovascular disease? I know.
And it's true, they will lower LDL, but what people don't realize is that's not a good thing, because what it does is it oxidizes the remaining LDL, putting you at greater risk for heart disease. It's really weird because it does lower the LDL. That's true. So everybody thinks that means you're getting healthier. And by no means are you getting healthier with more oxidized LDL.
Or how about that saturated fat is bad? I mean, I actually still get comments on blog post or recipes going, oh, but that's so much saturated fat. In fact, I had a question on my Facebook wall today asking me about saturated fat.
Yeah, saturated fat, it's probably the most benign thing you could possibly eat to your health. I mean, it will raise HDL. We know that happens. That's a good thing. It lowers triglycerides. That's a good thing. It happens. It lowers the amount of small, dense LDL particles that are in your blood as well. So it's doing all these positive things. And oh, yeah, in some people, it happens to raise their LDL. But when it does, it tends to be mostly the large, fluffy kind, what we call pattern A particle size. I don't know why people are so upset about this. And then, of course, off of lipids, the satiety you get, the clarity of mind you get. There are so many benefits to eating saturated fat. Plus, it tastes really good. I read in Beyond Bacon, you know, really well-sourced pastured lard is just a great way to flavor food. I mean, why would you not eat that way?
I will confirm it's delicious.
You've had a few meals with it.
And I would also say that it's interesting to me that, you know, I mention a lot about gallbladder indigestion, but, you know, I think that this is a really good marker for me in my N equals one stuff, but also for other people to understand that my body that doesn't have the organ which stores bile to help you digest food, which means that I need to eat food that's easy to digest more than anyone else. That's why I have a really difficult time with legumes. I have a really difficult time with seed oils. I have a really difficult time with several foods that some people in the paleo community don't necessarily have as much of a problem as I do because, and I cannot intermittent fast because my body just doesn't store that bile in order to make up for a meal 12, 16 hours later. So that to me is interesting that the food that my body digests the best is saturated fat.
Wow.
Lard and coconut oil are the fats that go down easiest for me. I know that if I have a breakfast, that is moderated in saturated fats, that it's easier for me than if I have something else that's kind of more difficult to digest because breakfast is the worst for me. So I think it's interesting, you know, you look at someone who's more prone to having digestion difficulty and you say, okay, what's easiest for this person, because that probably translates to other people as being easier for them and they're just not seeing it in the same symptoms because they still have that gallbladder. And I would say by far and away, I have come to learn that if I focus on saturated fats, that I have a much easier time digesting those foods. So for me, it's not even just about cholesterol. It's about like micronutrient absorption and being healthy and not having IBS. And in that case, like I cannot eat seed oils. I can't. Like they kill me. I mean, they literally were killing me before I went paleo. I was dying from my health standards. And, you know, finding saturated fat and learning how to properly digest food has been life-changing for me, to say the least, you know?
Mm. But getting people to shift to eating saturated fat when they've been told for decades to avoid it like the plague, that's a hard ship to right.
Yeah, I didn't even believe it my first year of paleo. I mean, Matt, I remember having conversations with Matt as we ate like chicken breast with no skin. Like, I don't know. I mean, I know they say fat's okay to eat, but I just can't get my mind around it. And it, you know, it took some time and learning and reading and listening to enough people who were smart, Chris Kresser, Diane Sanfilippo, you, Jimmy, you know, all these different resources that were available about fats and digestion and inflammation causing a lot of these things, not
right.
The actual food themselves. And I think that's really where people need to focus, because for me, learning about inflammation being at the root of almost all Neolithic disease was what really helped me understand my lifestyle more thoroughly, you know? That was more than 4 minutes.
That was more than 4 minutes. I better read this question.
That was a New York 4 minutes.
This question is from Kayla from Chanhassen, Minnesota. Stacey, did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, Jimmy's better.
Chanhassen? I've never heard of
Chanhassen, Minnesota. It is MN is Minnesota, right?
Close enough. Yeah, MN is Minnesota.
All right. Hey, I plead Canadian. Stacey's got no excuse.
My excuse is I'm terrible at geography.
What, eh?
My Canadian accent didn't come back that much after my trip to Canada, did it?
You didn't really leave the house, so.
No, I was cloistered the entire time. That's why. Next year. Okay. So, Kayla writes, my husband grew up on a steady diet of processed foods, candy, cheese, and otherwise not great foods. It wasn't until he was an adult and living on his own that he started to get into fruits and vegetables. His cholesterol has consequently always been high. His doctors have always said it was hereditary, mostly because both of his parents also having high cholesterol. After living together for a few years and now being married, I suggested we do the Whole 30. Our physical activity has never been a problem. We are both avid runners. We're college athletes, participate in several co-ed sports, and are generally active when not at our desk jobs. A total overhaul of diet was the only thing I could really point to that could maybe swing things in a positive direction. With him turning 30 last year and the doctor starting to recommend statins, I got nervous that he would be on drugs forever. We completed the Whole 30 in the strictest sense during the month of January and up until his blood work on February 4th in hopes that his numbers would improve. The results came back today. Unfortunately, they were the same, if not higher. His HDL is in a good or normal zone, but his LDL is way above where it should be, ranking in the very high zone. Will you help me understand, make sense of why the Whole 30 didn't improve the numbers? I wasn't expecting a miracle or normal numbers, but I was hoping there would be some progress. We're definitely bummed, and I know he's questioning whether giving up cheese and bread are worth it if his numbers haven't improved. Please help. I know I'm stubborn enough to continue this lifestyle. I've seen improvement with my acne and sleep patterns. Unfortunately, his big measuring stick for success was going to be the cholesterol check. Thanks for your help. Take
can
it away,
start,
Jimmy.
Can I start with this? I'm chomping at the bit because I don't think we have enough information with what she's giving you because cholesterol in and of itself going up or staying the same or whatever happened isn't telling us the whole story. I think what we need to know are two numbers that are very important that I did not hear other than HDL was in the normal range. Normal could be 40. They say that's normal. Ideally, your HDL needs to be above 50. And most of the time, what you can do to get it above 50 is to eat more fat in your diet.
Mine's 80.
Yeah, mine's 79. And then you want your triglycerides. This is a huge marker. People always talk about how many carbs do I need to eat? How much this do I need? If you are eating the right blend of foods for you, your triglycerides are going to be below 100 for sure. They always say 150, but it's actually 100 you need to be aiming for, and optimally below 70. Mine are right now about 37.
Oh, mine are 39.
You and me are sister
We're
and
close.
Brother.
Listen,
I know, right? And so when those ratio between those two numbers, chapter 10 of our book, we call these the two numbers, the forgotten and ignored part of your cholesterol panel, because it's that ratio between triglycerides and HDL that really tells the tale of your heart health. Now, I don't know about her husband's triglycerides and HDL, but pull that out, make that division, and let's see, is that number below two? If it is, he's probably in pretty good shape. And if he's under one, mine's like 0.75 for I didn't do well in math in school. I was a writer, but it needs to be below one to be in that optimal range. Then you really don't have anything to worry about. But there's other things you can do if she is worried that this paleo Whole 30 plan is making her husband worse. Get a C-reactive protein run. That's that inflammation marker that we were talking about earlier, C-reactive protein is a very easy marker to run. And if that one is under one, again, nothing to worry about. But if you're still worried, you can go get a CT heart scan. It's very simple. You basically have a CT of your chest. It costs $99 here in South Carolina. But you get your doctor to prescribe it for you. You go down, get the CT, and like 2 days later, it tells you how much calcified plaque is actually in your arteries. And by the way, mine's zero. And that's what you want, is zero. Anything under 100 is pretty good, but zero is the optimal. So you want to look for actual disease. Let's stop looking at markers on a piece of paper that came out of somebody's head. Dr. Kate Shanahan said that in one of the cholesterol clarity quotes. And she said, that just came out of somebody's head, this whole cholesterol, you know, having a number with cholesterol. Let's stop worrying about what your cholesterol number is, and let's start focusing on actual disease. And if you have a zero heart scan score, if your inflammation markers are coming back under one, you really don't have much to worry about.
I don't have anything to add.
I think that's what we got you on here for, Jimmy.
Yay!
Yeah, I mean, when I had my blood panel done last, it was about a year ago, and my, you know, my HDL number is fantastic. My triglycerides are awesome. My C-reactive protein was really low, but my LDL was high.
Yep.
And I literally got the like talk from. So it meant that my total cholesterol was just like above the cutoff. And I literally got the nurse with the message from the doctor over the phone call was reading off the numbers to me. I was like, yes, yes, yes. And you know, I've read enough to know that the LDL range for women, there's a lot of talk about redefining it because right. There's a lot of evidence showing that women should actually have the normal range for LDL should be higher, and that having a higher LDL range as a woman actually correlates with better health later in life and lower risk of cancer and things like
right.
Like important things. And so I heard that, you know, slightly high LDL, and I was like, yeah, awesome. I was so excited. And then I got the talk about, so, you know, we really need to watch this, and the doctor would really like you to go on a low fat diet, but eat lots of flaxseed. And I'm non-confrontational. So I just went, sure. Okay. Whatever, as I'm spooning coconut oil into my mouth. But, you know, like for me, that was like reason for success. So, you know, part of understanding the numbers is understanding that the ranges that they give you is based on obsolete science. I mean, not just yes. old science, but obsolete science. And the scientific community has had a much better understanding of the relationship between HDL and LDL and triglycerides and other markers and heart disease for, you know, decades, you know, like 15 to 20 years. And so that's just starting to permeate the medical community. So there's the other side of that is be suspicious and also read up about what Chris Kresser has written about statins, because he's actually broken down the research on exactly which population of people statins have been shown to be beneficial for. And it's this like really narrow range, like men over the age of 65 or something like that. And statins are used for, you know, everybody anywhere, but they've only been proven in clinical trials to even be effective, and even then it's not actually the effect that we want.
And never for women.
It's never been shown to be beneficial for women. If anything, it's been shown to cause more problems.
Fertility and, problems.
And higher risks of cancer and depression, all kinds of, you know, not
diabetes,
good
yeah.
things. So yeah, Chris Kresser's information on statins, he really breaks it down and he goes into the science, and that would be another really good resource to keep your husband off of statins.
And one of my experts for the book was the great Dr. Chris Masterjohn, who said in traditional cultures where there was no heart disease, the average female cholesterol level was around 250 and even higher in some of the older population.
Perfect.
I know.
I'm right on target.
And then for the men, it was somewhere around 225, 230. But those are much higher. I mean, those levels, you go to your doctor with those levels right now, and they're going to push statin, statin, statin. And I got the same talk that you did. You know, it was horrible. You go to your doctor, and you're all excited about HDL and triglycerides and all these things that you know are good. And then he's going, statin, eat less saturated fat. All of these things that it's kind of like a broken record, you know. And I have great respect for doctors, you guys, but they're just totally clueless when it comes to cholesterol. They
understand. I wish at the time that I'd had the confidence to really engage in a conversation and take it as an educational opportunity. But
would you now?
Yeah, I probably would. are you kidding me? I'll walk in with your book. I'll be like, here, read this.
Just read this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I probably would now.
Good.
But yeah, a year ago I wasn't. I just didn't have that confidence with the material yet. Like I just didn't have as in-depth an understanding as I do now. So I didn't feel like I could really engage in a debate and actually inform somebody of something. Like it just kind of felt like I would just be doing the hand wave. Well, science says this, which, you know, is different than me being able to point to papers and mechanisms and things, which there are some really great scientific papers out there now that actually summarize all of this research specifically aimed at clinicians. So, and I have a guest post on my site by Dr. Laura Davies, who actually links to all of these papers as really good papers to bring into your doctor's office to start a conversation. So that's maybe another good resource for people.
Awesome.
So did we keep our show to an hour?
No.
It's almost 2 hours. Mm-hmm. But that's all right.
When the great Jimmy Moore joins our podcast, you have to take advantage. And we really discuss two topics under the guise of fat phobia. So
It was a 2-for-1.
I love it.
Thanks for joining us, Jimmy, and for being on our lengthy podcast.
Oh, it's fun. This is different than being on mine. You guys have a really cool rhythm to your show. It took me forever to find rhythm in my podcast.
We didn't have rhythm when we started out.
Well, kudos to you because you got it figured out. And that's the neat thing I'm seeing with all these new podcasters is you guys are coming on much more seasoned pros than I was. So great job. I'm just proud to have you as part of the community.
Thanks, Jimmy. We learned a lot from listening to you in the early days.
Listening to my mistakes and correcting them.
Tell Christine I said hello, and I hope you guys enjoy some time together back in your home state. And
Thank you.
Enjoy your book, baby, if you just got it in your hands.
I did. I'm like holding it in my hands. I'm like clutching it, not letting anybody touch it.
I slept with Beyond Bacon in bed with me the first night it arrived. I'm not kidding.
Did you really? That's adorable.
Sarah. You'll know soon. You'll know soon, Sarah.
You get one copy, like, express delivered to you.
Yep.
And then they send, like, the big shipment arrives 1 to 2 days later. And yep. So I literally did not let go of that copy. I've got it marked book number one. We didn't get an express copy of, like, Dinosaur the same way. They just all came in big boxes. But, yeah. Anyway, well, congratulations. And it was great talking with you. I'm sorry I missed you this weekend. But I hope to see you again soon. If nothing else, I know Matt and I want to go to PaleoFX again, so I'm sure you'll
absolutely
be there.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
I'm planning on going this year, too. So
be there or be square.
For sure. All right. Well, till next time, everyone. Happy first episode of the second year of the Paleo View.
That's awesome. We have to find a shorter way to say that.
The first episode of the second year. It's like I need like to carry the one or something.
Exactly. Bye, guys.
Have a good night.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Hey, Jimmy.
What's going on? I'll give you another one. I'm sexy and I know it.
Okay, no.
Hey.